Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. Today, I'm very excited to have Gareth, the founder of Decom, with us to tell us a little bit about how they're tokenizing commodities and assets across the world. So thanks so much for being here, Gareth.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. It's an absolute honor. We've been talking for quite some time about this particular day, and so I'm pretty thrilled that it can occur even in and of itself. So very happy to be here. Appreciate the invite and opportunity to chat with you.
Yeah, of course. And a little bit of background, I am an advisor to Decom, so I've been working a little bit with them. I've gotten to see their progress over these past few months and gotten to know Gareth pretty well. And I think he's a great guy, and I'm pretty excited for him to share his story with you guys. So just to get started, I was hoping you could tell everyone how you first got interested in crypto, and maybe a little bit about your background before that place.
Yeah, no worries. I think it's a story actually I quite like talking about and telling people. It's, let's say, more of a journey of my life rather than an intent. It was more of an outcome. I'd like to think it's preordained. Maybe there's some fate involved in it. I'm not sure. But I studied electronic engineering, and I've always been a bit of a fiddler. You know, I like to take things apart and see how they work. And sometimes the shiny new thing is very attractive for me. The earliest memory is what I can think of is getting this. I don't know if you ever played Battleships when you were a kid, but on paper, you know, the first electronic one that my mom gave me and for my sister and I to play, and I took it apart and it never worked again, obviously, because, you know, I was quite young. But I've always been fascinated with things from the electronic point of view or digital point of view. And so I studied electronic engineering, and basically the process of my life has been just building out ideas that I thought at the time, you know, and some of them did, some of them didn't, added value to people around me or added value to process around me, right from, you know, access database systems, you know, all the way through to sort of on-premise server systems, a SQL server, and then the evolution of database architecture. And then I built businesses kind of around those abilities for databases to perform certain functions, and all the way through to, you know, New Zealand, where I live, a company that I was the CEO of and building out software solutions on reasonably advanced sets of database architecture and working out what those databases could do, fast, slow, interactive, like block storage, you know, tier one type stuff. And I discovered blockchain more as an opportunity from a database architecture point of view rather than crypto as a currency that was trying. I think the crypto as a currency is a fascinating topic, you know, decentralization of our futures in terms of finance. But the blockchain technology was something that I was particularly intrigued in. And so I started looking at that. What are the properties of it? How could it be used? What sorts of applications make sense to actually sit on the database architecture of that nature? And there's obviously a lot. At the time floated the idea with the company that I was running out of it to go to board and talk to them through potentially working in the blockchain industry. They weren't too keen. I was very keen. And so I decided to just take the leap of faith and put something together myself, really, and start up a company investigating into what I thought blockchain would be able to do in the future. And I was lucky enough to meet the co-founding team at Decom, primarily our technology team, which is headed up by Dr. Ravi Shamria out of a company called Zeev Inc. It's American-based, but primarily out of India. Probably one of the top two infrastructure deployment blockchain companies on the planet. Just unbelievable set of skills in terms of deploying front-end, back-end, and blockchain architecture into existence. And we worked through a process of trying to identify what we thought was going to be the next wave within this blockchain space. We came up with the idea for Decom. You know, that's where we formulated through, but that's, I guess, my past and why I became interested is this fascinating new toy where I reckon I could never learn all about it and still be learning while I go. And that for me is, it fills a lot of my passion to know that I have to really work to get my head around how something operates, and I'll never be at the forefront of it because it's moving so quickly. Even when you're right at the front, you're still behind somebody, and that's just really exciting.
Yeah, it's very hard to keep up, that's for sure. So what was the sort of original idea for Decom, and has it sort of evolved over time, or would you say still pretty closely fits the original vision?
The message became more narrow over time, but the original idea was we looked at we looked at what the status quo was, right? Which is there's a crypto, very crypto focused audience. And to a large degree, I felt, and I do still feel, that that audience is tapped out slightly in terms of the ability for us to communicate any further and converting people into the narrative around, let's say, metaverse and NFT applications and crypto type structures that are very digital. And there's a lot of jargon that goes with it, and that creates barriers to entry. And I think that the audience that understands and wants to participate with that, maybe we've reached, not saturation, but we're certainly close, because the market climbed and then has plateaued. And then having a look at, so, well, if we want to introduce, first of all, a new audience into utilizing this architecture, this database architecture, what types of things do people want to participate with in reality anyway? And it's quite obvious, it's around us all the time, is we want to generate wealth, we want to generate activity, we want to generate investment, we want to do well for ourselves, we want to do well for our friends and our family. And so taking away the barriers to entry of physical assets or the data of physical assets that exist in the real world and giving people the opportunity to invest into them through tokenized asset structure or fractionalized ownership applications really is an audience that already exists, and no one really needs to worry about what does NFT mean or, you know, what does the wallet seed phrase have to do. I'm interested in this topic around protecting my own wealth, or at least growing my wealth, but entering into opportunities early enough that I can generate some of that wealth. And so for us, asset tokenization meant these things that I'm describing. It's actually the relationship and the connection between people and their opportunity and their connection to each other in those opportunities, rather than taking this big traditional finance vehicle and just tokenizing that and then giving the people anyway that exist in that infrastructure more opportunity and excluding the rest of humanity. So we're very much about the people, you said the other 90% or the other 95% of the world that we want to actually provide these access points to. And, you know, why wouldn't people like ourselves or, you know, similar-minded individuals want to become their own portfolio managers and have access to assets in early stages, where I think we're equipped as human beings to make decisions if we've got all the information and it's transparent and it's audited, which is what we're about, and providing that opportunity. So that's what we looked at as a world and said, okay, well, if we want to design that, what does it look like? And how does it work? How does it operate?
So what are the existing barriers to entry, you'd say, for some of these, you know, either commodities or, I guess, what would you say, firstly, are the assets that you're talking about, and what are the barriers to entry that exist today for the average person?
Well, it's knowledge. So it's the ability to understand that they are there, that they're investable, and that you have an opportunity to become involved in them. And I mean, we talked a little bit earlier now about narrowing that message. We went to market with a very blockchain-focused message for the first 6 months, and it didn't resonate. You know, it didn't feel authentic. Wasn't what I felt attached to. And then we kind of went back to the drawing board and we're like, okay, well, what are we really trying to do here? And then formulated the businesses and the customers that wanted to interact with those businesses, specifically in sustainable and renewable energy and sustainable technologies, because that is something that I deeply care about and something I've been involved in for a while. And the commodities and the assets we're talking about all exist in sort of the sustainable part of the world. But those barriers to entry are knowledge and access. And so why I mentioned all of that is I had a conversation with a solar farm owner out of Dubai, and we were talking about investing and how people have access to those investments. And there's probably five of us on the call. And I asked the other four people, I was like, so you want to invest into solar right now? How are you going to do it? And they're like, well, I don't know. I was like, exactly. You don't know. There's no platform for it. So you're going to have to be in the market. You're going to have enough capital to get involved in that market. You're going to have to be linked to individuals that have got enough knowledge around their particular product that's going to be deployed. So it's going to be viable anyway. And then you get access, right? So it's just, there's these multiple tiers. And those tiers are both in knowledge and in time and access. And so we're stripping away those layers and providing easy to understand access points for people to say, well, I care about sustainability, but also care about truth and trust and transparency. And so when I want to get involved in sustainability, I want to get access to the information that gives me the trust that the asset I'm going to acquire is also measured up against that transparency. And so those are the key points where we differentiate ourselves, I think, is tokenizing an asset it's not, how do I say this without sounding convoluted? It's not special, right? Anyone, you can go do it. There's lots of NFT standards and ERC standards of tokenization that you can use. But how many of them incorporate the authenticity, the audit, the validity, and the verification of the asset embedded into the process that the token was issued with? And that's very few in my experience. And I'm not naive enough to think I know everybody's experiences. But certainly that side of it is providing access and removing those barriers so people can invest into things from a standpoint. And then with regards to commodities, it's exactly the same thing. Early stage commodities that are part of a sustainable battery technology, for example, which is one of the platforms we're actually deployed next week. How do you get stuck in there, right? You want to go and support the electric vehicle market by making sure that you can invest into it and help it grow? I wouldn't know where to start, right? I wouldn't have any clue. So we're helping and just make things easy to understand, easy to access, and then also trying to remove the word crypto and or blockchain while we describe that message, because there's a framework that's trusted. There's a system that you can audit yourself. There's information that you can access. You don't need to trust anybody else's opinion. It's there for you. And that is why you've got access to the asset versus, reports or hearsay or just no access at all.
So who would be some examples of the types of partners that you might want to initially work with, and how are users going to interact with them? Are they going to interact with them all in the same way, or do you have no. different models set up based on who the partners
yeah,
are?
Yeah, we're also taking a very, I'd like to think, diligent and considered approach to putting this in place. And we're also on a journey of learning, of understanding ourselves, what is going to occur in these different segments. And so our immediate go-to-market strategy, one we've just deployed really, was to find two distinct groups of, let's call them customers. And our customers, in our sense, are businesses that want to provide these types of assets to people to invest into and, have the distinct verticals that they're operating. So the one is sustainability with renewable energy, in particular solar. And the other is in commodities, in particular graphite. And graphite makes up some of the properties that are deployed into electric vehicle battery technology, actually the cathode in this particular case. And so we wanted to identify clear asset classes that were different from each other so we could learn the nuances of what does a country difference make? What is jurisdiction or the laws or the compliance or dealing with the regulators in that particular area? What do we need to learn? So that when we issue the token, it's actually contracted in and regulated by the jurisdiction in which it exists. And in their vastly different things. So one's a commodity and one, it's yet to be defined as a class, really, if you think of tokenizing power and having that data perform certain functions of carbon credits or tokenized kilowatts or fractionalized ownership.
And so could you share maybe some of your learnings from those discussions with the regulators and, how you decided your strategy based on this?
Yeah, so I'll talk a little bit about the commodities and how we even arrived there. In this industry, I feel that there's a lot of waiting and there's a lot of people wanting someone else to do something before they take the risk. And I say risk, it's more reputational and functional than it is actual. So one of the guys I work very closely with, he put it most succinctly, is we already have a pretty well-established set of regulations and compliance, and it's called the law. And so if you follow that, you're going to be all right for the time being. And if the law changes, well, then, you change with it. So what we discovered through the process is that there's a lot of, we had a lot of interactions with a lot of different kinds of lawyers or advisors into legal and compliance that didn't want to take that step and didn't want to say, well, I will back what I think because this is in a framework that already exists, which is law. And so with regards to the commodities, we ended up working with an extremely well-educated, highly esteemed lawyer out of Toronto. And so I won't mention her name because I'll leave her to do that when she decides to put a name to the product when we launch it. But she's designed the framework, the interpretation, the issuance, and the substance behind the fact that this particular token is a commodity and therefore needs to have certain properties. It needs to act this way. It needs to do this thing. It needs to have certain parameters built into it that when anyone looks at it, they go, yep, that's a commodity. There's no gray area, right? And so she's also pretty well versed in what the SEC is doing and how they deem securities or don't deem securities. And so that framework's been built around specifically being a commodity. And if you think about it, when this asset tokenization is being talked about, at the beginning, it was very much like, oh, let's do property and let's do this and just do that, and very complicated assets. And where different states in, like, I live in New Zealand, like I said, but in Australia, different states have got different rules, and within those states, there's different rules. So how are you ever going to figure out what all those look like and get all the lawyers aligned? So we started with something, let's call it simple. I wouldn't say it's too simple, but it at least is one thing. And but that still took 8 months, to work through that process. It's not easy because someone has to take the leap of faith and someone's got to do the issuance, and that's what we're doing at the moment. So yeah, the compliance isn't tricky if you accept you need to be regulated. And so we've never sought to be not regulated. We've never sought to try and do something outside of the bounds of the law. We've always sought to consult with, what are we doing right now? What's this asset class? What does it require? And let's work with regulators and compliance officers and lawyers to make sure that it fits that description. And when someone acquires it, they're fully confident that they can utilize something that is a commodity and it has those properties and is defined by a certain set of rules. And so we built the system. In fact, the commodities exchange, not an exchange, the commodities platform, around the fact that it needs to have those types of properties in it. It's not a, so it doesn't be, deemed a security. It's no, I mean, one of the primary parts is it doesn't hold any value outside of what the market says the value is at the time it gets sold. And that's, what we've had to build that token issuance toward. So yeah, complicated, but if we look back then at, let's say the verticals, what we will achieve over the next couple of years is identifying specific verticals with specific compliance and regulation, putting the frameworks in place for them, understand them, and then help those expand. And then we'll start to look to build an aggregated platform on top of it, which allows people to access different portfolios and have access to different assets through one structure.
I mean, that definitely makes sense. So could you go a little more into how the token interacts with all the pieces of your platform and maybe what all those pieces are? I know you've mentioned this commodities exchange, but could you maybe spell out sort of the full ecosystem and how the token interacts with it?
Yeah. So from our blockchain side, so DCOM as the blockchain has a utility coin, and that utility coin is the mechanism by which the transactions occur on the blockchain, is the funding mechanism. It's also the validator mechanism to make sure that it's decentralized and validators are rewarded. But its utility in reality, in essence, is to authenticate physical assets. That's what it's there for. So when data moves from A to B, and data is a transaction with embedded data inside of it of a, for example, change of ownership, a commodity, a compliance piece, an issuance, that data set is authenticated with the underlying utility coin, which is called DCM. And just, I don't know if I'm allowed to do a little plug, but we've just listed on CoinStore. And so CoinStore is a Singaporean exchange, one of the fastest growing exchanges in that region. So we've been, a couple of days ago and doing quite successfully. So I'm pretty pleased with that result. So that coin is now listed. Now, asset owners, when they're performing the function of authenticating the asset, so let's start at the beginning. We want to get the geological report, to say for the mine, for graphite, for example. There's a quality report, there's an auditing process. All of those transactions utilize DCM as the underlying mechanism of their authentication. So we agree this transaction has taken place. The validators have a look at it and say, we also agree this transaction has taken place. And therefore, the properties of the transfer of that data are inherently built into the blockchain. So the velocity our coin gets only happens from adding and authenticating more and more assets. So more graphite that gets produced out the ground, I transfer my ton to you. All of those are transactions on the blockchain. And all those transactions together formulate the use and the volatility, or excuse me, the velocity of the coin, which is called DCM. The tokens themselves, so the issuance of the graphite, obviously that's completely separate. That token, how it moves around the blockchain, is just authenticated with DCM. But the the graphite token, for example, is its own token and exists in of itself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So are there any are there any like existing crypto companies that you might compare yourself with? Or are there any companies that are out there who, you know, you feel would be your ideal partners to work with?
So I don't think there's anybody we're competitive with. And I only say that because I believe we can work with everybody. And one of the things that's attracted me to the community and to the blockchain industry as a whole is the willingness to partner rather than compete. Because as a group, as a whole, everybody is better off building an ecosystem than they are becoming a silo. And so there's definitely a few blockchain protocols that are more than equipped to manage asset tokenization. Of course they are, they're wonderful, and they're highly intelligent in their own way. And there's a massive progress being made in certain aspects of, let's say, zero-knowledge proof and zero-knowledge roll-ups and new things that are occurring, which is very exciting for us. We're looking at that as well. But it allows us to form part of this ecosystem of, how did I describe it to somebody? When I was building traditional database architecture systems, I never really thought about having to choose one database, and that's the one I'm going to stick to for the rest of my life, and that's the application that's going to run on it. Never. Like, there's primary, there's secondary, there's transactional, there's a whole, you know, there's registration systems. You use different database architectures for different applications. And so how we thought about the world going forward with blockchain is, I think blockchains themselves will be defined more by the ability to interact with others and perform a specific function. So perhaps an asset tokenization, DCOM, would be a good blockchain to use, but perhaps for, you know, high volume trading or high volume movement of coins, then maybe Solana is a better option. And not to be stuck into this mold where we know we're not going to solve every problem, but we're certainly going to give a crack at the asset tokenization. And then the second part is so we've got two companies really, you know, there's two trains of thought. Blockchain decentralized, you know, deployed, has an audience, is doing its own thing, is working towards a technology stack. And there's businesses that build on top of it. We're participating in some of those businesses, leading them, helping them get deployed. And there's loads of those that we would want to bring in and say, come and partner with us. We've got a team, we've got people that can help you onboard. But there's, you know, quite a number of companies tokenizing assets. Let's call them layer two solutions, if you will, or even just application solutions that we would want to partner with. So, yeah, I don't think there's competitors per se. There's people doing it differently. And I applaud that. And I think it's wonderful. I want to still work with them. And then there's people building out tokenized asset infrastructure, which we want to work with as well.
So you mentioned you guys just listed on CoinStore. What was your, decision-making process like in listing there? Did you think about listing elsewhere? And what's your strategy for rolling out more widely?
You'll excuse me while I just sneezed there in the middle of an interview. But
you're good.
Yeah, the decision, was twofold. One, it was a very difficult market when we launched, and we did that intentionally. We knew that we'd have access to really good development teams within our own team, that we wouldn't deploy them into other projects for high value, but it was going to be hard. And that echoed through into quite a lot of different facets. So relationships, partnerships, capital raising, as you would know, it would have been difficult through this time, as well as convincing exchanges that this new blockchain that was still a little baby at the time was going to have high volume and, you know, be the next big thing. And it was a difficult conversation, let's say. So we went and spoke to a couple of tier one exchanges, but I guess my impression that I was left with afterwards is there's definitely two kinds of partnerships, and that is true in the exchange environment, and there's true even in like the one you and I have developed, is there's people that genuinely want to see things grow, and there's people that actually only just want to make some money. And there's quite a lot of the second group, and there's not a lot of the first one. And when things are very tight, and I understand people want to make money, so let me not say that that's not what we're here for, is it becomes more difficult to just say, I actually want to become involved with the goal, and I know that the funds will come afterwards, versus I have to get the funds, and so I'm making decisions around that. And I found that to be the case with exchanges too, that the number one priority wasn't about what we were doing or what we could do, or we've got unbelievably good partnerships signed, but they're long-term, right? And so you have to have a long-term vision. They wanted like 30,000 users on Twitter and so much volume. Like, we haven't launched, so we can't guarantee those things. And so there was just no potential to partner. And if it was, it was also extremely expensive. So they didn't feel, intrigued to join with what I think would, they would be happy if the coin was doing really well, but they'd be equally happy if it was doing very poorly, because that means trading, and trading volume is what they were looking for. And I wanted a partner that was more interested in what we were doing. And so CoinStore actually is an exchange we met 3 days ago this time last year. And we've been negotiating and working with them ever since, and they've backed us to this point, and we wanted to then return the favor and back then. So it's a strategic move from audience point of view, because it's Southeast Asia and they've got a really good audience in that region. Also an ability for us to see what a new market thinks, because we're primarily New Zealand and Australian focused to begin with. And what does a new market think of this now that we've actually deployed more of a global infrastructure? What do they think about it? How do they feel about this new thing we've designed? And so allowing us to analyze and predict how the audience will operate in a new environment with a great partner like CoinStore, I think will bode us really well in the future when we select exchanges that also want to partner with us for the right reasons. That we can then do activities that generate growth for the investors into the coin itself.
That's some really great insight, honestly, on the process, sort of behind the scenes. I think it's good for people to know why some of these, you know, kind of crappy coins end up there and some of the good ones don't, and why they end up where they do end
up.
If
in the entire community of people suddenly feel that it's going to go, you know, to the moon, as it were, that is trading volume for an exchange. And what I guess upsets me a little bit is they know it's going to go the other way. Right, they know that. It's got no value behind it. Definitely going to go the other way, but they're listed nonetheless. And there's a huge amount of
audience. They make money when it goes down too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get it. It's the business model. I just don't think it's right. So I guess maybe I've been told I've got a very, very black and white understanding of the world. And whilst I've got a gray shirt on, my gray area doesn't exist at all. So I accept the criticism, but yeah, I call things as they are, and maybe I'm not right all the time, but this is how I feel.
Oh, well, nothing wrong with being an optimist, but I think it's, you know, it's worth paying attention and it's worth knowing. But maybe, you know, that's where the decentralized exchanges come in. And, you know, I've even noticed just working with them, or not really working with them, just using their products and platforms feels a lot more fair, feels a lot more, I guess,
yep.
I feel like I have a lot more custody over my funds. I'm not worrying about someone rugging me, that someone investing in the wrong thing.
I'm really keen to explore. So whoever might be watching this particular podcast when you publish it, you know, get a hold of me. If you're a DEX, we're super interested to participate in that side of the world. And I believe fairness overall, an opportunity, and standardizing what the world thinks the value is, I agree with. I'm not going to dictate what it is. I will do my utmost from building value and building businesses around producing outcomes on the DECOM blockchain. But what the blockchain is and operates, that is a community decision. It's not mine.
So when it comes to building out the community, how have you gone about attracting people that are your users? Have you worked with your users through test nets or any sort of betas or anything like that? How are you going about, you know, building in public and engaging with your community?
Well, organically, so we're only going to go organically, and every user is somebody I'd like to think I at least know who they are. It's going to get to a point where I can't, but I know that they're a human and not a bot. And, you know, we started off last year in June, and to the 22nd of June, actually. And from there, organically building an audience who'd want to be early into this opportunity. And, you know, with limited budget and what have you, we went around that really diligently and efficiently too. So the first thing we actually did is, as a team, we all invested in ourselves and we built our testnet. So we didn't raise capital before that. And we took that to market. So one of the things, and going back to, let's say, no substance and all hype, that's reasonably prevalent in this industry, right? There's lots of projects that promise something. Whether they intend to do it or not, I don't know. I won't speak about it. People, certainly, lots of white papers, not a lot of activity. One of the decisions we made was we were going to do actions first and words later. And so when it comes to everything that we do the action first, we deploy it, then we start talking about it. And it was, we started with that ethos. So we built the test net, we deployed it into the market, as you will, and we invited people to become test net validators. And we ended up having 75 validators running test net at a stage, all decentralized, all fully running their own servers. The first testnet we deployed, we invited our users to break it, have a crack, see what they could do. And they did. They broke it. So we know, well done. And then we used that information. And we built an incredibly robust architecture around what happens in the real world when certain activities occur. And relaunched the second testnet in December, January. And we ran that for a couple of months and then decided to launch mainnet in late February. So, yeah, we've been pretty much, so DCOM means decentralized communities. That's the word that what actually stands for. And we always envisage that by doing what we do, we're going to engage with these little communities, perhaps maybe big communities, and they would end up connecting together because of the architecture and the structure and the assets that we would build on the chain at a later date. And that's where the name DCOM came from. So we kind of do things with the community in mind first. Serve a purpose where they can participate with us, even how we raise capital. So we've got exactly zero VCs on books. And it's all to do with community growth. So giving people the opportunity to interact with an early stage investment, if you will, into the blockchain. That's been very successful to do it that way, but successful.
Yeah, I think people are going to be looking more and more for things that aren't backed by VCs this cycle after the mess they made in the last one. And I think it's wise because they've just been pushing these companies to do things that very often result in, you know, the average user getting dumped on or getting, you know, pushed into a staking program that ends up screwing them over. And so being able to make those decisions on your own, I think is really important. And so as a community member, I guess, how can I get involved? How can I start becoming a part of, you know, decision making? If I am to buy tokens right now, what do I do with them? Can I become a validator? Do I, you know, stake them somewhere? Do I put them in some kind of a liquidity pool? You know, what are my options? And so what right will they be eventually, I guess?
Yeah. So that's it's a journey. The right now options are as you described, there's a community that you can join. So we've got a very vibrant Discord channel. Don't use Telegram too much. I find there's a lot of bots and stuff. And for me personally, I get 600,000 messages and it's hard for me to keep up. And Discord's just reasonably well managed. LinkedIn is my preferred choice for professional type interaction, but we've got communities across all of those structures. So you can just join in and listen and talk to and hear from people's experiences before you decide to do anything. You can just come and join that community. Insofar as the here and now goes, we'll be launching a program called Defender, the Defender program, which is just a cool word for a validator. And that will be a very unique launch and allow people to earn great revenue from participating as decentralized validators of the DCOM blockchain. Our exposure, and we chatted just briefly before this conversation actually started, our long-term exposure in terms of coin liability is incredibly low. As I mentioned, it's less than 1%. So less than 1% of all the coins are going to be in circulation through the first couple of months that the coins now launch with CoinStore. And over the first 2 years, if 3% go into circulation, I think that would be quite a lot. So very conservative of how we're going to put it through. And so we also, I want to reward people. The system is there to reward people for interacting with it properly, that there's not going to be an influx of coins into the market. And when there is, it's because assets been tokenized, and that's what they're used for. And so those are the mechanisms. We've also put in place growth for an ambassador program, which has also been launched more recently. And so the ability to earn DCM by performing ambassadorial functions. In fact, we launched that 10 days ago. And within hours, we had 400 applications. We closed that down, and we onboarded 250-odd ambassadors. And whenever I turn my LinkedIn on now, there's people from all over the world doing their daily tasks. And it's run by a guy internally, his name's Dagesh. He's an absolute legend. Like, this guy's another level of good. And these are his concepts that he's brought to the table as a growth specialist. And so we want to grow organically. Let's get people to participate with us. This ambassadorial program is part of that. We're about to launch a community fund, a substantial community fund, which Dagesh will launch next week. And so you can get involved with that. And there's tasks and opportunity to earn DCM through doing advocacy type tasks online and different opportunities within that. And then, of course, the Defender program to stake within the network. But then later on, there will be a community DAO. And so community-led events, sort of networking events, chapters within different cities. That's what we hope to move towards, where our long-term goal is that the word DCOM and DCOM community is the community. And they're inviting me to come to their events because they're the ones in take custody of the brand of DCOM. That's where we're moving towards.
I really like that vision of the future, and I think that's a really exciting way to go about it. And I encourage everyone to check it out. So if you're going to be, you know, back on the podcast, say the end of this bull market, where do you hope DCOM will be? You know, will you be working with ExxonMobil to tokenize solar and carbon? Will you be working with Tesla to track their, you know, nickel production and, overall, just where do you see yourselves in the ideal world?
So primarily, well, you know, if, depending on how long we predict this is going to go on for, but let's imagine it's 18 months or so or a year, is what we've developed in the solar energy world is an absolute first in interacting with verification of the data that exists around solar and solar energy and lots of partnerships. So our goal would have been to deploy and to be interacting with and have formulated compliance and regulation at country level whilst assisting and deploying new solar solutions to provide sustainability in our energy grid. And in doing so, allow a vast number of people to own part of that asset and to participate in how that energy is sold and or delivered or built. And the second part of it is to have a measurable impact within the electric vehicle battery technology sector and having and helping mines that produce these components and commodities that go into batteries to massively scale up and to deliver solutions to the likes of Tesla, in fact, because this is where this technology and these components go, or GM in their electric vehicle market, and have made an impact, a measurable impact around how did we scale this industry by tokenizing it, allowing people to interact with it, that at the end of it, we can say, well, if this were the line where, so for these mines, they've got like a 6-10 year sort of pipeline, if you will, of delivery. What happens if we can make that 3? And just the access to this technology becomes at such a rate that electric vehicles perhaps are cheaper to acquire or more accessible for people to drive around. So a measurable impact in those two areas would be where we are. Who are we working with? You know, there's some big players already. One in particular, which I can't speak about because it's under NDA. But if we get that solution in place, we'll have a marked impact globally on how carbon is measured.
Well, the ones under NDA are always the most exciting ones, but yep. Hopefully you can make that announcement soon. That's very exciting. Yeah,
well, the two primary customers, if you will, which is called Oro Energy and Savala Commodities Corporation, you're going to be able to see those in the next 60 days. They're going to market, they've got customers, they're producing product. So you have to evaluate them yourselves as an audience. So, well, here's the thing that you guys have done. This is what we're growing towards. And be able to see the vision that we've created for those two products. Individually, they're massive. You know, they're huge industries. So I think we can make a marked difference in both of them.
So for people who do want to see that announcement, where can they follow you? Where can they find more information about some of these pilot projects? How do you recommend people stay involved and join your communities?
So Discord, if you wanted to interact with other people, if you wanted to keep abreast of information, LinkedIn's a pretty good spot. to get those announcements. Our website will always have all the latest information and all the posts and everything we've done up at tour dates on there. So each launch and announcement will be part of a blog post on our website. That's decom.network. That's soon to change ever so slightly because we've got a little community slot on our new website that we're going to deploy next week, which is one of the most beautiful websites I've ever seen in my entire life. And it's a team out of Europe that's designed it, and I cannot wait to launch it to the world. And we're focused on community message and what is the feeling that we're trying to elicit here, not what is the technology. The technology supports the feeling. The technology is awesome. I love it, right? But if us as human beings, if we don't connect to it, if we don't feel something for it, it doesn't exist. And so we're the important piece, how people connect, how people interact with something. And technology should support that, not the other way around.
Yep. You got to create a story and help people figure out where they fit into it. And I think that's the key. But I think you've told a very compelling story. And I think what you're doing is really interesting. I'm very excited to be able to tokenize some commodities and trade them around. It's honestly one part of the financial markets I really haven't had a lot of experience with, just because I feel like it isn't that accessible. It's not in the places where I usually trade. There's not a lot of education about how it works. It's sort of purposefully complicated. But the people who do know how it works make a lot of money and know what they're doing.
Exactly. And access to it, you need to be in a certain category. No, could that work? Globally. There's certain standards, which is called sophisticated investors. And then you need to have a certain asset portfolio and just don't make it hard. It doesn't need to be.
Yep.
It doesn't need to be hard. It needs to be accessible.
And that's what crypto is about. And it's done that for a lot of other things already. So I think makes sense that this is the next one on the chopping block.
And even insofar as that exchange part goes, we're opening up a lot of conversation of big players in the market that want to participate with assisting in the transfer and exchange of various types of commodities on the platform. So I think it echoes the message that people are starting to understand that there's a huge swell of activity around having access to my decision-making, my wealth, my family's longevity of success, and letting me make those decisions, but give me the information to make it work.
Absolutely. And I think you were wise to start when you did. And you're now at a place where I think the market is going to be really responsive and you have the technology ready for them. A lot of them are willing to take the leap right now. I'm excited to see where this goes in the coming months. And we'll be sure to have you back to get an update sometime soon.
Thank you so much for coming on.
I really appreciate it. And we'll be sure to drop all the links to all the communities and their website in the episode description. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll be back with another episode soon.